Mr. Mervyn, reel 15. What were the trenches like? Can you actually describe the trenches themselves?
Well, they were hewn out of rock. They were obviously jagged, you know. And every now and again, there would be, I call it a wetting pit. Maybe it would have been sandbagged. You know, you've got to remember this is going up the side of the hill and along the mountain. I don't know when the hill becomes a mountain. It's 355 metres high, which is thinking all 1,000 feet. So I don't know when it's a mountain or when it's a hill, but it's a pretty big hill. And the trench is sort of going from one all over the top, like you see a battleship with dressed overall with a button in that face, just trench went.
So it followed the contours of land.
With a few diversions on our side. You know. And so, who initially dug this trench system? I don't know, we didn't do it. But they obviously had help with the engineers or somebody because it was bloody rock. You know, they had a hell of a job trying to dig into it and that, but we did. And it was rubbered and. Come to the sandbags, so you didn't just fill in the sand and put them down. You had to tuck the end in. And we know, end of a sack where you get all of it lifted up. You know, you put about 3/4 of the sand in. Then you tuck the bottom end in, then you tuck the flap over. Then you patted it like a brick. And then you made it like a brick wall. Oh, I went through that. There was no just plumping them there. You had to have it all dressed off. And there was places that we didn't like it very much, where I think they called it revetting. It's like corrugated sheeting and that, stuck in the side. When they got hit with a mortar bomb, there used to be tin flying all over the place as well. Which, you know, it was different thoughts on whether it was a good thing or not, you know. And then off the trench, the communication trench and where the weapon pits were. But at the side, this is on the down at the bottom, had where we lived. And it was just off the communication trench. It made a short tunnel. Well, obviously it wasn't a tunnel. What it was is they blasted a hole in the rock with an entrance, and then you put, put planks along over the top, you know, for your roof. Planks. Then I think you set for like a tarpaulin. Then you have stone, bricks, chippings, and everything. And then soil, and then something else. The idea is that when a mortar bomb comes over, it hits the stone and it explodes, and you're all like underneath, you know. Because they were like a cave, but it wasn't hollowed in, it was like man-made, you know. We had a fire in them.
Is this the Hoochies, is it?
Aye. It was a dangerous thing. It was like a drum of diesel with a drip coming into a pan and a pretty big spout, and you lit it. Like, you know, the old fashioned lanterns where you light the wick and you put the thing on and you get a light. Like, this is something similar, only you throw heat off, you know, and like a space heater, you know. And they were great when they were working, but they were a little bit hit and miss, you know. I mean, we had some pretty low temperatures, so you needed some heat, like, you know.
And that was an H Hoochie, who was one of these. So, how big were these Hoochies?
I could stand up in them. And there was a bed, a homemade bed.
What was that? How
one
was that
or
made?
Two beds. Well, once again, these steel, they call them pickets, usually used for string and barbed wire. Well, you jammed them between the top and the bottom. You couldn't drill them in the bottom because it was rock, you know. You jammed maybe the 6-foot one between the top and the bottom. And then you've got a couple of 4-foot ones, and you made a frame. Can you picture a frame of these steel pickets? Then you scrounge some signal wire. You usually plenty what the Americans had left. Then you strung it from side to side, like a like a spring, like a bed spring. And then you put your blanket on there, and you put your sleeping bag on there, and that was it. And you remember to get too high on this side, and maybe too on the other side. And that was it.
And that was your bed.
Aye. And after a while, the signal light used to sag a bit, you know, and there was a few gaps would come in it, and then you'd have to go and get some more signal light and string your mattress, your springs, you know. And that was what, that was your bed. And we never took our clothes on. We never took your boots off, other than to change your socks off. You slept with your boots on.
Well, what, did you have a sleeping bag?
Well, sleeping bag was getting our boots on ready. Good sleeping bag, mate.
And you could leave, well, I presume you leave the rest of your clothes on. And what else was in these hoochies?
Rats. We should have run out of the place in rats. And no matter what you did, you couldn't get rid of them. You're fighting the losing battle, especially the Americans there, because they would open a tin of beans or a tin of fruit or whatever, take a couple of spoonfuls out. But instead of them having an empty sandbag in the hutchie to put your litter in and empty it every day, they'd throw it over the top of the trench and sure you've got all this party food strewn all over the place and across the last just coming. Because our first job was go over the top and pick all their litter up when we took over. You know, night with an empty sandbag, picking all the bloody tins up, not thrown over.
From the Americans.
And
what other precautions did you have against the rats?
No.
Was there none at all? No.
Put them with a bayonet. If you saw them around the top, I would gel at them with a bayonet. Not be the first time that you wake up and there's a rat looking at you, you know. Like you got felt them running over, isn't there? It would pinch out. You had to put everything in a tin, toothpaste, any chocolate, like that. Because if you let the toothpaste out, there, that's what you can take it in the earth, let any biscuits out there, it would take it, you know. But with the, explained with the wood beans, and with the like tarpaulin and that, and then you could see them running at the tops. You know, you couldn't see, but you could see the thing in the type pool, you know, between the type pool, you know. Then sometimes you get garbled with a bayonet or something. You just get your object because in the rain, it's so the whole way you jab the bayonet, you know. Initially, one or two lads took a shot at them, but the bloody thing started ricocheting their ass, so they stopped doing that. There was no mouse traps out like that. You just bear with it. And that was it.
And that was your living conditions?
Living conditions.
And apart from your little space heater, did you have any lighting in
them? Candles. And we had to have a wash this year every day.
And where did you do that?
In the hoochie.
In the hoochie.
We had Korean porters. I suppose it was their Royal Army Service Corps. They used to come up and they used to carry a jerry can of water. And to a point in the company area, the platoon area, and you would go down and pull the jerry can up. And you had balls, you know, fill the bowl and drink the tea and have a share, no hot water. And that was it.
So, in the front line, in this particular, when you moved up and took over, there would be two companies in the front line?
Three. One in reserve.
Three companies in the front line and one in reserve. Yeah. Can you remember who was in at that particular time?
Well, I said Dean was on the left, and I don't know who was on the top and on the right hand side. I can't remember who was in reserve. You know, you're not impressive. You're just there in your little unit, your little world. You know, the A company somewhere else or B company somewhere else. You know, or they say, there's a patrol from A company coming out through our lines. Expect them out, but last night they should be coming in at a certain time, you know.
So approximately how much area would your platoon oversee?
Oh, it's not the same. I wouldn't like to say, you know. It was a canny area. Not miles and miles, you know. As I say, a bloody mountain. I mean, we had a part of the mountain we were after. And every day company, when we were there, we were in the line. We didn't have a reserve platoon. Everything.
The whole company was in the front line.
Yeah. We didn't have a reserve platoon anywhere like that, you know. Every company was there. And that was it. During, I would say in a week, 5 nights in a week, you'll be out on patrol. You're out nearly every night. The nights you were in the trenches, obviously you had to stand too. And then somebody had reported that the barbed wire was down. You know when you say in the Flint where there's a minefield and they've just got some steel pickets, then they've got a strand of barbed wire and they've got their skull and crossbone on to denote a minefield. Well, it had been blown down. They said it was a minefield. I doubt whether there was any mines in it because the number of shells that used to have in must have exploded them, you know. Anyway, so I bet you've got to go out and put this barbed wire up. So, there's a guy in the court, you know, sergeant in charge and something like that. And then you find it's all lying down, so you get the state picket, you've got to get the state picket. We all got to make a noise, so we had a big wooden mill, like what you have for putting tent pegs in on the marquees. You've got an empty sandbag over the top of this picket, and you're trying to rear the picket into the rock. And they tell you that, you know, on the right hand side is the minefield, why nobody's going to stand around that side to hold the picket while the other poor kids, you've got about three blokes all trying to stand on his foot and swing a mallet, you know. And that's, you're doing stuff like that. For all you know, you're out on patrol, you're outside doing maintenance, for the want of a better word, you know.
We'll talk about patrolling shortly and your sort of general duties. Just talking about life in general in the trenches. What sort of meals? What were the meals like?
Three, four packs.
What were they like?
They were good. You would either get, I think, a 3-4 pack for maybe. Well, that's one man, 24 hours, or four men, one meal. And in that, there would be beans, a tin of fruit, usually a tin of 50 cigarettes, some boiled sweets, a tin of corned beef. There was, you know. And on the odd occasion, we used to get a hot meal. These porters used to come up with these big containers on the back of hot wrong sort of a container. And inside the containers, it was like what they would be able to. The cooks at the back had put the potatoes and that in, you know, and you had to go to a central point. Then you got your soup, your main course, your sweet, and your cup of tea in two messes. You know, as best you could, sort of. But a lot of things here that we had a hot meal with, everybody that I spoke to, who the hell reported that on it? Maybe it was the officers there, might have got a hot meal, but we certainly didn't.
These rations that you mentioned, where were they kept? Where did they come from?
They would come.
Were they sent up daily?
Yeah. They would. These Korean porters used to bring them up.
And did you heat them up yourselves?
Yeah. There was a little burner with them. Like a little tablet, you know, put it on there, pour a match to it, and it would heat it up.
And you heated them up yourselves. And you mentioned the odd hot meal that was brought up.
Yeah, and the only one I can really bring to mind is the one that we got for the coronation day. And they brought a hot meal up for it, you know, you got ice cream up there, but it was all meant about it, like milk and winter. That was supposed to be our treat for the coronation. But, that was it. We very seldom, well, there was no cookhouse to go to because there was no one. It was all brought up. They used to have these, as I say, these Korean porters, and they used to, I can't courage works.
And they did all the carrying from.
They did the.
From your.
I see there after the service call. They used to carry it up over the top, you know, and bring it down to us. And I wasn't there with Job one night at Christmas. They were out of the line. They were doing the Christmas meal companies. And they had these big, blow lamps. You know, the old-fashioned blow lamp, paraffin blow lamp. But you can get these big ones. You used to see the electricity board people. Well, they put a big pot of tar on and used to melt it when they were doing the cables. A big burner, you know, used to pump it up here and this big burner. Well, they were doing the Christmas dinner and had these burners going and had potatoes in one and had some turkey or something like that. And the potato was getting boiling dry. Well, the jerry cans say a screw top was water and a flip top was petrol. Well, somebody put water in the petrol one, or petrol in the water one. He said, so the coke, the lad was after his coke, it's getting dry, so he took the top off, he got water, poured it down, the next thing you know, poof, the first potato was all over the place, it was singed eyebrows, it was all sorts, you know. And for the Christmas dinner, they were picking tap all that stuff. But that's the type of thing, you know, that happens, you know. Well, the funny time when we think about now, Mr. But it wasn't very often that we used them in the line. It was nearly all called for.
And they brought
which you want them.
And they brought water up to Elias as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
And you mentioned your rubbish. I presume did they take it away?
Took it away. Yeah. and for the toilet facilities, they used to.
Well, that was going to be my next question.
They used to hack a hole in the side of the trench. Communication trench. Somehow they dug a hole down and they used to put loose stones and lime and all sorts down. And then it was an old shell casing which used to go in and then used to stick up, you know, with a mesh over the top and lime. And that's where you went and did a number of piss and that, you know, and just stood there and just. And the other toilet, the dry toilet, was. You had to go like on into the dead, you know, get off the front. You had to go a trail to get away around. And it's like a sandbagged emplacement where you sat, I think it was two or six together, and you sat and there was a machine gear, you know. But we didn't dally long because every now and again a mortar bomb would come over and you'd pump your pants in away quick and you just. And you did it into a bucket. And then the bucket was changed by these Korean porters, a full one taken out and empty one put in. And that was his sanity, best as it could do. It couldn't do any better. You know. And this used to be changed, this pisophone, we'd call it a pisophone. It'd get pisophone news, and all the rumours would come from the pisophone. And they used to move it into different parts so that obviously it didn't, the time would be as high as it had to be because in such conditions you had to be as hygienic as you possibly could.
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned rats. Were there any other things, I don't know, mosquitoes or possibly?
Well, yes, in
the summer.
In the summer there was mosquitoes, you get mosquito bites in there.
And of sanitation and things like that. Were there any problems with people's health through things like?
I don't think so. It was pretty good. Well, as I say, you had to have a wash and a shave every day. There was no getting away from it. You weren't lined up and inspected, but the platoon officer came along and had a look. I mean, the weapons inspector, but they didn't have to be inspected because they looked after them. But there was an inspection every day, and they also the same thing had a wash and a shave. Usually, obviously, it was on the morning because you could have been out all night, and then you come back and you say, right, there'll be a weapon inspection, and say you're going to wash the shirt by, say, I don't know, 10 o'clock, and then after that, you have to go to bed, and then get up at 4 or whatever, and get something to eat, And then you would know before you went to sleep where you were out to that night and where you were going, which position you were going on and who you were going with. And you just put your head down and then got yourself ready. And then that night you would go down to the assembly point where you want to jump off and anyway and make all that, you know.
What other things happened during the day? What was the sort of general daily routine? Was it pretty much...
Well, I'd say
sleeping.
70% of everybody was asleep. But the people who were awake during the day were like the people who were exposed boots, you know, slight injury or illness, slight duties. And so there would be somebody looking out over the valley, you know, there would be somebody south there on guard. But there would be others who would be doing a bit of maintenance, daylight maintenance, or be doing this, that, you know. The company clerk would obviously be doing some paperwork. And the other people who were doing that would be maybe somebody who was due to come home for the mob. And he's in his last week or something like that. And I know where we were, if you were had a week to go, you didn't have to go out. But somebody said, I'll take yours, you know, you've done your work. You stay in. And they were the people who would do these daytime jobs, who would maybe put a few sandbags up or depending what part of the hill you were on. See, if you're up on the top, nobody could see what you're doing because you're above everybody. So you can work quite lately, you know, and do it. But if you're down where we were, they could see you. So you had to do it as best you could. In fact, just when the sun was starting to get a bit of heat, some of the lads took their shirts off. No problem. But the Chinese could see the white skins through the camouflage and they got plastered with mortar bones. So nobody took a shirt off after that. That was a type of, I mean, it was a pretty innocent thing. Oh, it's love, you know. You get a bit of suntan. And then you never think that your white skin stands out. And of course, they knew where the trenches were. I mean, they'd be zeroed in on them. Still got your shirt back on again.
So there wasn't much else to do during the day apart from sleep. No, no. What kind of things kept you occupied?
Write letter home, clean your boots, clean your gear, get the mud off, clean your boots. You had no brass to do because we had no brass.
So you pretty much left to your own devices just to fill the time in.
You just went to kip and then you've been out all night, you know, you've been out 12 hours. And by the time you come back and you clean your weapon, you get some heat and you get a washing machine, you know, you're ready for trip, and then you're up and you're out again. You didn't go visiting her out like that. You didn't go out once they enjoy down in Bay Company, you didn't know where Bay Company was.
So you were really pretty much just in that particular space, your little area.
With your section and with your platoon.
Obviously, patrolling was very important, and we'll come on to that, in a wee while. What other sort of duties did you have to do? I'm thinking there's a sentry duty.
There wasn't any sentry duty because you were on. If you were out that night, you were sleeping, you know. The people who did sentry duty during the day were obviously the ones who weren't going out that night. They would have to. Everybody who wasn't out at stand two at night, last light. And then when it got dark, it would say, like, so many stand down. And then everybody stood two for first light. Because that's the worst time for seeing anything, you know. To stay up too long if it starts to move. And so everybody up and out, you know. But there was no... No, there was no jankers or out like that, you know, there was no punishment jailers or no deals, no standing to, you know, for inspections. It was, you were checked, but not strenuously, it was like standing to attention, you know.
And there were no sort of jobs to be done. There were no particular rotas for doing things.
No. I can't remember. All the work was done at night, more or less. When they couldn't see what you're doing, quiet.
So if you weren't out on patrol on a night time, what other things were happening then?
Well, as I say, we'd maybe be able to string and barbed wire.
So you would have wiring parties?
Yeah, wiring parties. Or you'd be standing to them in the weapon pit. I mean, for all, you have patrols out in front of you, and there's still out there. So many, not everyone would be mine, but the ones which would cover, you'd be standing in there for 2 hours or something like that. Sometimes what they would say to do, right, in each weapon pit, there was an empty ammunition tin which had been set into the sandbags, and it was just like a cupboard. And there would be hand grenades in there, HA and phosphorus, and they might say, okay, clean hand grenades. You would take the base off, take the detonator out, and just make sure they're working, I mean, obviously, if they're going to be standing there, no one might need them, you want to make sure that they work. It's like everything else. You've got to clean the rifle, you've got to clean the magazines and everything. So, they'll say, right, clean them, check them, check that the fuses are right and that. Or they might say, right, clean all the Ben gun magazines. I think there was 32 magazines for each Ben. And obviously you've got to take the magazine to bits and clean it and put it back again, make sure the screen's all right. And check just maintenance, with what you've done. Making the trench more presentable. Easy to get a stretcher down. There were some trenches when you went on, you couldn't get a bloody stretcher down. They must have carried everybody down in a blanket, First of the summer when we went down, where you were going on with stretcher, you couldn't get round. The blanket would get round, so you sort of widened them so that you could get around.
So did you do much work on the trenches?
After the time, yeah, they did quite a bit after the shelling and that, every day there was shelling and mortar bombs coming over. You just got used to it, Sometimes you'd get the pop, when they put the bomb down, the next pop in the front of the next bike coming over. Like, unless you get the one that's going to go over, that's going to spread us out, and that's going to come near. And it's duck. But that was it. Very, exciting, frightening. All in one. Didn't really bet luck in the trench. I think we were better luck in the trench than out on patrol. Because at least you had some trenches to carry down on patrol, and you have no problem.
Did they have listening posts?
Listening posts. They were the main ones that you had to do. Listening at them all along the front.
How would they dug? Were they dug into no man's land?
They were in no man's land. Usually you found some shovels somewhere and you just squatted into them.
So they weren't dug out from the trench?
No. You walked over the top. You walked down through the minefield. And you walked so many yards out. And there was a recognised place where you, obviously the British Chinese would have an idea where you were, and we just squatted there all night.
On your own?
About 4 or 5. A corporal in charge, and the rifleman.
And some kind of communication, I guess?
That was it, that was the communication. And we used to go out, at last flight at night. You would go to the nearest place where you could get out of your trench system to where your listening post was. And obviously, where you go out, there's always a sentry on there, if you want to call them a sentry, or somebody there. and they would say, right, all of these places had a name. Alice Springs and Surrey Hills and Cobble and all that, you know. And they say, right, we'll go on, the court will say, right, you know, six men going out into Alice Springs or whatever. And okay, six men went out down to the and then those lads who were on that exit, they would know that there's nobody else but to come up there until that patrol's due in the first light, whether it be 6 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning.